Hi, everybody. This is Gary Sandy, and thank you very much for listening to the WKRP cast.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say...
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
Are you awake? Whoa! Are you awake now?
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Say what?
Dear God, she's going to kill us all.
Welcome to the WKRP cast. My name is Alan Stair.
And I'm Donna Stair. This is the fourth and final season of our week-by-week, episode-by-episode rewatch.
Join us for this final season as we're getting into the music,
the trivia, and the fun of WKRP.
So, fellow babies, stay tuned and stay cool. It's time for the WKRP cast.
I'm a WKRP in Cincinnati.
Welcome back to the WKRP cast. We have no idea who anybody is this week, and we are still in Gunselman world. What is our episode, Donna?
We are ready to discuss Who's On First. The air date was November 11th, 1981, written by Dan Gunselman, story editor Lisa Levin, executive story consultants Steve Marshall and Dan Gunselman, directed by Dan Gunselman.
Gunselman world.
With Herb in the hospital, Mr. Carlson must fill in for him in order to negotiate a contract. But if Mr. Carlson is Herb, who's Mr. Carlson? In the meantime, Johnny tries to avoid settling a poker debt.
Now, we were laughing about it, but welcome back to Gunselman world. It's kind of a part two, but not really. Last week, Straight from the Heart, and this week's episode, both written and directed by executive story consultant Dan Gunselman. There are some similarities between the two shows. We go a lot of places over the two episodes. Dan likes to explore outside the bounds of the standard station set. He's also setting up a lot of change in these storylines. We've got the physical change to the lobby and the potential staff change, a possible new salesperson on board. Gunselman's a mover and shaker when it comes to storytelling and directing. It's no wonder he goes on to be an executive producer on Gloria, Growing Pains, and Just the Ten of Us, among several others.
The inspiration for this episode's title, Who's On First, comes from the comedy bit by legendary duo Abbott and Costello. The premise of the sketch is modern-day baseball players have some crazy nicknames. The result is a fast-paced and hilarious misunderstanding. When it was first introduced on radio in the 1930s, the real-world examples given for nutty baseball nicknames were Dizzy and Daffy Dean. Abbott introduces a fictional team where the player nicknames are just as crazy, only there are also common words and phrases. The player on first base is nicknamed Who. What is at second? Lou's confusion is immediate and hilarious.
You know the guy's names on the baseball team?
Yes. Well, go ahead. Who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the guy's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
What are you asking me for? I don't know.
Now, wait a minute. I'm
asking you who's on first.
That's his name.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
That's it. That's his name.
Well, you ain't said nothing. I ain't asked you nothing.
You did.
You know the guy's name on first base?
Sure.
Tell me the guy's name on first base.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who is on first, Lou?
What are you asking me for?
Now, don't get excited. I'm saying who.
I'm asking you a simple question. Who's on first?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who? I'm asking you, what's the guy's name on first base?
Oh, no. What's on second?
Their famous bit was inspired by burlesque. Burlesque performers had been using clever wordplay and fast-talking comedy bits like this one for many years. A famous one had a British schoolmaster interviewing a new student named Howe. He came from where, W-A-R-E, but he now lives in Y, W-Y-E. You get the idea. But Abbott said the team's Who's On First was taken from an older routine called Who's the Boss. Abbott and Costello would do Who's On First hundreds of times throughout their career, but never exactly the same way twice. The version from the 1945 film The Naughty 90s is considered their finest recorded performance.
In 1999, Time magazine named Abbott and Costello's Who's On First the best comedy sketch of the 20th century. In 1956, a gold record of Who's On First was placed on display in the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. A video of their performance from Naughty 90s runs on a loop in the display. In a case of life imitating art, 2007 LA Dodgers shortstop Chin Lung Hu got his first major league hit against the Arizona Diamondbacks, a single. Dodger announcer Vin Scully couldn't resist. He announced the hit with "Shades of Abbott and Costello. I can finally say who is on first base."
Being voted the greatest comedy sketch of the 20th century, I was thinking about that. When you think about all the comedy that happened in the latter half of the 20th century, like every sketch that Saturday Night Live ever did.
How do they base their findings?
It was Time Magazine. I don't know if it was a vote or a lot of times they get editors together who will kind of come up with that. But yeah, when you think about all the comedy that was produced in the 70s, 80s, 90s, to hone in on this one sketch as the best comedy sketch of the 20th century.
Well, and you've got to think of all of the comedy sketches on I Love Lucy,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, every bit from every sitcom. Yeah, it's quite a statement to make. We get into this episode in Herb's hospital room. We open up with a close-up on Herb being spoon-fed. The Herb in the hospital storyline is a continuation from last week. Herb is keeping his mouth shut, refusing to eat, until he can see Mr. Carlson.
And our nurse, she's being played by Bonnie Urseth. She's back. For a full bio on Bonnie, check last week's episode, Straight from the Heart.
Do you know what will happen if you don't eat?
What?
You'll die.
The door opens and Art walks in carrying a box of chocolates with a ribbon on top.
See, all this fuss. Now, wasn't it nice of Mr. Carlson to go way out of his way this morning?
No, that's all right. I mean, tonight was my night to visit. I'm just getting out of the way early.
Herb rolls his eyes as the nurse heads to the door to leave.
Now, I expect to see a clean plate.
Mr. Carlson tells Herb he looks great. He asks if they've found anything wrong with his heart yet. Herb tells him no.
Super. That means you're going to be out of here and on your vacation in no time, huh?
Herb points his finger at Mr. Carlson.
See? You want me out of town.
Mr. Carlson doesn't understand.
Huh?
Herb points to a want ad as he hands the newspaper to Mr. Carlson, asking him to explain.
Art takes the paper and starts to read out loud.
Account executive, top 10 a.m. station, faltering client list. Kind of sounds like us, doesn't it? Call the general manager, 555-956. That is us. Oh, my God. This is a mistake.
An upset Herb tells Art every out-of-work salesman in town has seen that ad.
You just mentioned ticker, and everyone thinks you're a goner.
Carlson tells Herb that's not true.
Look, I promise you, your job will be there as long as you want it.
Herb lays back looking dejected. He asks Art if he's sure.
I swear.
On the heels of Carlson's promise, we cut to a close-up on the coverage map in the lobby of the station. There's a slow zoom out to reveal the lobby, and it is filled with Herbs of all ages, sizes, and shapes. Herb was right. It's his worst nightmare. The ad in the paper was like blood in the water, and the sharks are hungry. Jennifer is sitting at her desk feeling very paranoid. She takes her cup and saucer and stands to go to the coffee machine. All of the men in the lobby stand, too. The door to Mr. Carlson's office opens. Andy is talking to a man who is leaving.
Thank you very much for coming. We will call you.
He asks Jennifer for the next person.
Nobody says a word in that scene, but boy, you can feel the tension just looking at that
yes.
group.
And how you can see how uncomfortable Jennifer is.
Oh, Jennifer is very uncomfortable. And we're kind of curious as to why Andy would be interviewing salespeople. Programming and sales usually don't have a lot of crossover. Hiring a new salesperson seems like a job for Art or maybe even Herb. So the guys were standing every time Jennifer would stand or sit. The custom of standing for a woman as she enters or exits a room came from the Middle Ages code of chivalry. These days, codes of etiquette state both men and women should rise in a business situation for the arrival of either men or women to the group. But you only do it one time. Once the person's been recognized, you don't need to stand each time they come or go. In social situations, it is still the practice for a man to stand when a woman enters or exits the room, and that is every time. So these guys are on point, as Herb would say.
And have you ever done that? Have you stood when a woman comes into the room? I've never seen it in action, personally.
I think in some formal situations as a Boy Scout, I did. But that was where, you know, there are a group of us sitting there and someone walks into the room and we all would stand together. But to just on my own stand when anyone, a woman, enters, I really haven't ever done that.
Next, Jennifer.
Jennifer looks at one of the men.
That would be you, Mr. Liskey.
A man with a briefcase stands up, buttons his jacket, pulls his shirt sleeves down, and straightens his tie. He then puts his hand up to his mouth and he does a self-breath test. Satisfied, he heads to Carlson's office. As he passes Jennifer...
Wish me luck, Dollface. I need this job.
The little ritual he went through kind of reminds me of a batter getting up to plate, getting his jacket right. And his shirt sleeves and
you
checking
have to do
the...
All,
gotta do all of
all
that
of
before you go into that big meeting. And Mr. Howard Liskey, our next applicant, is being played by E.A. Sirianni. In an interesting twist for WKRP, this is E.A. Sirianni's final acting credit. WKRP tends to be a lot of actors' first performing credit. E.A., or Edwin, has 27 total credits on his IMDb profile. He got into acting in 1968 at the age of 46. Sirianni appeared in both movies and TV. He had guest shots on hours like Mannix,
The Wild Wild West,
Bonanza,
and Beretta.
He had a few jobs where he would return to a series, but as a new character. He didn't have any recurring roles. E.A. was born in 1922 in San Francisco. He passed away on New Year's Eve in 1986 at the age of 64.
Jennifer makes a face and she shivers as she walks back over to her desk. She sits down and once again, all of the men stand, then sit. You see an impish little grin on Jennifer's face. She quickly acts as if she's going to stand, causing all of the men to stand, but then she sits before she gets completely upright. And as Jennifer is messing with the sales job hopefuls, we head into our theme.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
We come back from break, still in the lobby. Jennifer is nervously tapping her fingernails on her desk. The lobby is filled with even more candidates waiting to be interviewed. As we cut to Jennifer sitting behind her desk, we get a lower third credit that says both written and directed by Dan Gunselman on a single screen. We saw the same thing last episode but didn't mention it. These are the only two times it's happened in the entire series, probably because this is only the third episode to be both written and directed by the same person. Hugh Wilson had both a writing and directing credit on Baseball, but he didn't take on-screen credit for either thing. Hugh didn't really have to worry so much about appearing in the credits since he was the show creator. He got an automatic writing credit on every single episode. Dan is making sure to get his name on things right up front.
Johnny walks in. Jennifer is thrilled to see him. She jumps up and runs over to him, of course, causing all the men to stand yet again.
Johnny.
Jennifer takes Johnny by the arm.
I'll give you $20 to get rid of these guys.
Johnny laughs at the $20.
All right, 30.
Johnny turns to Jennifer.
It's interesting you should mention money, Jennifer.
What's it worth to you?
$562.16.
Jennifer stares at him somewhat suspiciously. His specific figure has made her pause. Johnny explains he got into a friendly little poker game. Jennifer begins laughing.
Silly me. If I had lent you money, I would never be able to respect you again.
I could live with that.
I could.
Jennifer tells him she just couldn't.
So Jennifer walks back over to her desk. As she sits down, all the guys once again stand. Art comes rushing through the door. He goes straight to Jennifer's desk and he asks her where Travis is. She tells him Travis is in Art's office. He's interviewing one of the applicants. Art starts towards his office as Johnny flags him down.
AC, sweetheart.
He calls him sweetheart.
And then a really loud, he snaps his fingers. It is a pretty funny move. So Johnny puts his arm around Art. He's into this desperate pitch, but Carlson keeps moving towards his office door.
Since you gave me that raise, I'm now making more money than I've ever made before, probably more than I deserve, and I was wondering in view of that if there was any chance at all that I might be able to get an advance on my salary of, say, $562.16.
Maybe not more than he's ever made.
I was making about 100 grand a year out there. Then one day I said, booger. Bunch of bozos call the station. Next thing I know, I'm in Amarillo hosting a garden show.
But more than he's ever made at WKRP.
Johnny also does not seem to have long-term memory. He's really kind of short-term about all the things that have happened in his life. So Art stands for a bit, his hand on his office door. He considers, and then he reaches a decision and looks at Johnny.
None.
So that's that. Art opens the door to his office and he goes in. Johnny defeatedly leans on Carlson's door frame.
And don't lean on my door, Fever.
We do a cut to continuity into Carlson's office. Andy is sitting behind Carlson's desk. Mr. Liske is sitting across the desk, facing Andy. They both stand and face Mr. Carlson.
Oh, this sir is Howard Liske. He has quite a sales background here.
Mr. Liske holds out his hand to Mr. Carlson to shake, which brings us to...
the line of the episode.
I was born on commission.
Fine.
That is a great, great line, and that is a great salesman line. I love that one. I'd never heard that before.
Mr. Carlson shakes his hand and tells him he won't be needed.
I was kidding.
Thanks for answering the ad. We've changed our mind.
Well, Mr. Liske is confused.
He's kidding?
Mr. Liske looks at Andy, hoping for a little sanity.
I'm sorry, Mr. Liske.
You're kidding.
We'll keep you in mind if we change our minds again.
Who's kidding who?
Wow, talk about who's on first. That is some fast patter from EA. Mr. Liske leaves the office and never acts again.
His last scene as an actor, and there it was. We saw it.
And it made it onto our podcast.
Onto our podcast. Carlson takes off his suit jacket and he hangs it on the coat rack. Andy is not happy.
Well, that was tactful.
Art tells Andy he doesn't want to talk about it.
Sorry, I agreed to the ad. We can cover for Herb.
Need I remind you, this was your idea to begin with. I believe you said we have a business to run.
I was wrong.
Carlson is reading the Western Outdoor News newspaper. Andy tells Art he was not wrong about this. The office door opens and Jennifer walks in. She asks if they're ready for the next gentleman.
Yes.
Jennifer walks on into Art's office telling them she'll just wait in the office until they decide.
Cheap cologne makes me nauseous.
That old spice.
We're not sure why Art might be reading Western Outdoor News unless he's planning a trip to California. Western Outdoor News is still in publication and has been since 1953. It's the only sportsman's weekly in the western United States, serving the interests of fishermen and hunters living in and around California. These days, you can choose either a print or digital subscription. This is not an Ohio area publication, but we have an idea as to why Art might be reading it. Check the headline. The main headline right next to the masthead says, "Turkey season set to open." We're betting the subtle turkey reference is why Gordon Jump is reading this particular publication.
It would be a California paper, and I just bet some friend of Hugh Wilson's or some friend of Gordon Jump saw it on a newsstand and said, "Hey, here, you guys got to put this on the show." Andy tells Art they need someone.
Hogwash.
Andy tells Carlson a concert promoter from Philadelphia is flying in to talk with Herb. Somebody needs to fill in for Herb and close this deal.
There is only so much that I can do around here.
A Philly reference. And after we meet the concert promoter, it's probably more of a Philly joke. Omaha may be off the hot seat.
Art faces Andy. He says the ad made it sound like they're looking for a permanent replacement. Andy explains they won't find anybody good if they say it's on a temporary basis.
What is wrong with hiring, as we talked about, a junior salesman?
Mr. Carlson tells Andy he went to the hospital this morning because Herb called him.
He saw that ad.
Oh, dear.
Uh-oh. Jennifer seems to realize how damaging this could be to Herb's fragile ego. Andy asks Carlson if he explained to Herb what they were thinking.
I didn't remember it.
Andy reminds Mr. Carlson about their conversation.
That it was for Herb's own good, He has always wanted an assistant, and now he really does need one.
Don't cloud the issues, Travis. I promised Herb his job was safe.
Jennifer, standing between them and looking from one to the other as they are talking, asks,
"What exactly does an account executive do?"
Andy and Mr. Carlson both turn and look at her.
Jennifer seems to be volunteering herself for the position.
"Well, it might be an interesting change for me for a couple of weeks. I could start out today with that concert promoter."
Andy's scratching his head as he tells Jennifer it's a little more complicated than that. It's really not. It's not a very tough job. Jennifer says Mr. Carlson could show her the ropes.
"Carlson? You kidding? Oh."
Forgetting where he is, Art glares at Andy. Andy uncomfortably buttons his jacket.
"That's a thought."
And I think Jennifer did that on purpose.
Yeah.
She mentioned that in front of Mr. Carlson, so he was right there. So how could Andy say no?
"Carlson!"
We head into the studio for the first time this episode, so you know what that means. Studio poster watch.
Yay!
The season 4 posters are moving constantly. Let's see what's new this episode.
Sometimes to the right of Johnny, under the Cincinnati map, you can get a glimpse of what looks like the head of a baby harp seal. And that's what it is, sort of. You're seeing Tior, who is the mascot for the late 70s, early 80s metal band Riot. Tior is a man with the head of a seal.
Hmm.
Yeah, Riot was into some weird stuff. This album is Riot's third studio album. It's called Fire Down Under. It features Tior on the cover in front of a field of flames. In spite of the weird cover, this is Riot's most commercially successful album. It was initially rejected by Capitol Records as too hard. After its eventual release, it peaked at number 49 on the Billboard album chart. There were no hits, but the song Swords and Tequila is noted as a standout from the album.
Riot was formed in New York in 1975 by guitarist Mark Rial. The band was fronted by Guy Speranza. This version of the band would break up by 1984. Riot has reformed twice and is still touring as Riot V. And we're not sure if that's V or the Roman numeral 5.
The poster over the Cincinnati map with the wide blue border around it is a band picture of Little Feet. I didn't like the way I said Little Feet.
Little Feet.
Little Feet.
Little Feet.
Little Feet. The poster over the Cincinnati map with the wide blue border is a band picture of Little Feet. It includes founder and lead singer Lowell George, who had died 2 years previously. When we get out in the hallway, we're going to see a promo for a Little Feet album that we think might be tied to this poster.
In the middle of the studio door, in the spot occupied by Al Jarreau last week, is the cover art for Foreigner's Monster 1981 studio album, 4. Released in July of 1981, 4 will hit the number one spot on the Billboard album chart and stay there for 10 weeks. We've already talked about the number 4 hit single, Urgent, from this album. 4 also produced the soft rock hit, Waiting for a Girl Like You, which goes to number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100.
I've been waiting for a girl like you to come into my life. I've been waiting for a girl like you to love that will survive.
The third single, although only peaking at number 26, is a favorite rock track, Jukebox Hero.
He heard one guitar.
Four was named because it was the fourth album from the band, and they were now down to 4 members for this album.
As we check in on the action in the studio, Johnny has the monitors turned way up while he's talking to somebody on the phone. We hear Born Under a Bad Sign by Albert King playing out over the air.
We can see the Albert King album Born Under a Bad Sign tucked under Johnny's arm as he's talking on the phone. This is not the first time Johnny's played Born Under a Bad Sign on his show. He also played it in the Johnny Has to Pay alternate ending of the episode, Contest Nobody Could Win.
I'm sorry I woke you up. It's just that I'm on the verge of a kind of investment deal here, and I need some advice. And you know, when Venus Flytrap speaks, everybody listens.
Johnny laughs a little. All right, let's see here. We have the morning guy calling the late night guy in the morning. This doesn't seem like a great idea. Johnny listens for a bit.
I'm sorry I woke you up. Noon is good. Yeah, that'd be great, man. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Nope, not a good idea. Johnny hangs up the phone just as Les enters the studio.
And now a special look at this episode's bandage placement for the 5-time Buckeye NewsHawk Award winner, Les Nessman. This is the Les Nessman Bandage Report. Now, here's Donna Stair with her report about Les Nessman.
Right wrist.
This has been a look at the bandage placement for Silver Sow and Copper Cob award-winning journalist, Les Nessman.
And it's his complete right wrist,
right,
all the way around.
Johnny used the phrase, when Venus Flytrap speaks, everybody listens. He was paraphrasing a famous ad campaign for stockbroker E.F. Hutton. The firm was named for founder Edward Francis Hutton. Hutton and his brother, Franklin, founded the firm in 1904. If it hadn't been for the mid-70s advertising campaign by the Benton and Bowles Advertising Group, you probably wouldn't know the name E.F. Hutton. In the classic series of commercials, a conversation would set up the phrase, "My broker's E.F. Hutton," and E.F. Hutton says, well, whatever was going on would just stop.
The original commercial in the campaign focused on two men in a noisy restaurant.
You'll never regret the purchase of a good stock, you don't say.
Yeah, my broker says it's a real good buy.
What does your broker say?
Well, my broker's E.F. Hutton, and Hutton says...
The noisy room goes to complete silence. The camera pulls back to reveal everyone in the room, including the waiters, attentively waiting for the man to finish his sentence. Then we get the line,
when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen.
It's considered one of the most memorable ad campaigns ever created.
Although the campaign was huge for Hutton, E.F. Hutton would go down in flames in the mid-80s. Hutton was caught doing something called chaining. A Hutton brokerage would deposit a check greater than the cash they knew to be on hand at the local bank. They then made a deposit in another bank equal to the amount written at the first bank. The net effect gave Hutton use of the money in both accounts until the checks cleared. It was a free loan to Hutton and very illegal. In about 1980, a single branch reported netting an extra $30,000 a month from funds created by chaining. And instead of putting an end to the practice, Hutton's president at the time sent a memo to other managers with details on how to put this trick to work for their office.
That so perfectly sums up the 80s right there.
Sleazy.
If you can make a lot more money by doing something illegal but not get caught, let's do it.
Why not?
At the height of the chaining scam, Hutton was shuffling money around, and this is staggering. Between 400 different banks. Most of these banks were small, rural banks with slower accounting practices. It's estimated Hutton was gaining the use of an extra $250 million a day without paying a penny of interest on any of that money. If a bank tried to say something, and remember, these are small rural banks, Hutton would question their banking practices. At the time, big brokerage houses could intimidate small banks. The scheme worked for 3 years before somebody finally blew the whistle on it and it was stopped. Hutton would never really recover from the resulting scandal. After declining in value, they would merge with Sherson Lehman American Express in 1988, and then American Express abandoned the Hutton brand in 1990.
Les walks over to the control board and turns the volume off.
You call that music?
Johnny tells Les it's good to see him. He pats Les on the back. Les looks at Johnny suspiciously, asking him why.
Well, because you're a fascinating fellow with your own slant.
Johnny is behind Les now, with his arm around Les and his other hand on Les's shoulder. Les tells him to go on.
Les, how many years have we been working together here, and we never just take the time to shoot the bull?
Les turns to face Johnny with a very concerned look.
What bull?
Talk, chat, converse, you know.
Oh, rat.
Les says this proudly.
We were kind of right there with Les. What bull are we talking about? What exactly is the origin of the phrase? We had to look it up. It dates to the early 1900s. Shooting seems to be a euphemism for talking, as in shooting the breeze or shooting your mouth off. The bull in the phrase is short for bull, doo-doo. A gathering for shooting the bull is often referred to as a bull session. Usually, bull sessions consist of nonsense, exaggerations, and outright lies. Shooting the bull is traditionally a male pursuit.
Johnny tells Les to sit down as he pulls the DJ chair over. He asks Les if he would like some coffee. Johnny hands Les his own mug with all of his air names on it. Les thanks Johnny as he takes the mug. Johnny sits on the control board counter, propping one foot up on the chair Les is sitting in. He asks Les, how's it going?
Well, last night I was feeling completely alone in the cosmos.
Oh.
An insignificant speck in the sandbox of time. Which is unusual for me, Johnny. Mm-hmm. I'm generally a pretty up fellow.
I'll say.
But sometimes this job gets to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then I remembered what Mother Nessman said to do when frustrated. And so I beat my rugs.
Les takes a sip from Johnny's cup of coffee.
Every night this week, I've beaten my rugs. They're very clean.
So Les sounds really frustrated here, and it got me to wondering, remember the bandage report? It was his entire wrist that was bandaged.
Ooh.
And I was like, he's all frustrated. Mm. He's feeling...
You think?
Like a speck in the sandbox of time. I don't know. I don't know if he did that on purpose, or if he just said, I'm going to do my wrist today without any thought.
Or it might have been Phil.
Phil, maybe.
Caught him.
Do they still? Does he still have... I thought Phil died.
No, wait. Phil became Phyllis.
Oh, Phil.
Phil didn't die.
Phil did. A part of Phil died.
Every night this week, I've beaten my rugs.
As for beating the rugs, yeah, we get it. Les sounds like he's using a euphemism for masturbation. Wow, last episode we had half-cocked and porn theaters.
And fully cocked.
Gunselman World can be a bit raunchy. For Les, we're quite sure he's literally beating his rugs. But it sounds like something else, doesn't it, you dirty-minded fellow babies? Whether it's waxing the dolphin, buffing the bishop, the five-knuckle shuffle, or choking the chicken, we've come up with a billion different ways to talk about male self-pleasure over the years, but this got us curious. What's this about really beating the rugs?
Up until the 1950s, rug beating was a common practice in U.S. homes. Rugs would be hung from clotheslines or specially designed carpet hangers. Beating rugs knocked dirt and dust out of the fibers. Spring was a common rug beating time. A winter of wood or coal ash had...
Sorry. When thinking about it as a euphemism, spring was...
You can't quit thinking about it. Well, spring is a time for Twitter painting, too, you know, according to Disney. But...
Okay.
But listen, let me finish. Spring was a common time to beat your rugs. But no. Because after a winter of wood or coal ash, it had all accumulated in the pile of the rugs. All right?
Okay.
Rug beaters could be made out of wood, rattan, cane, wicker, and spring steel. Antique rug beaters have become collectibles. You can still find commercially available rug beaters in Europe. Rug beating went out of fashion in the... Rug beating went out of fashion in the U.S. when vacuum cleaners became effective. And affordable. Kirby, Eureka, and Hoover put an end to rug beating. Except, of course, in Dayton. When Mother Nessman was frustrated.
And you know what's funny about that? That didn't strike me funny when we were rehearsing this and talking about this and writing this little section that we were going to talk about the rug beating. But then just for some reason, just now reading it, it just really hit me as funny.
Oh, my vision is blurry now. I can't see the script. Oh. All right, get it together.
Let's get it together. Johnny is looking at Les as he plays with his mustache, not quite knowing how to respond to this.
Fascinating, Les.
Well, Les nods his head in agreement. Johnny then tells Les he's been frustrated lately, too.
I got in this little poker game.
I'm not going to lend you any money, Johnny.
Les. Johnny asks Les what makes him think he's going to ask for money. Les doesn't want to hear it. He turns the studio volume way up.
Les! This is making it very difficult to, shoot the ball.
Les has covered his ears with his hands. He's shaking his head back and forth. Frustrated, Johnny leaves the studio.
As Johnny steps into the hallway, we've got a quick poster watch.
Yay!
There's a poster on the outside of the studio door. It's been there a couple of weeks, but this is the first time we've been able to identify it. At first, it looks like a reindeer with a big set of antlers. After a good still freeze and a screen grab, we were able to see it's a German shepherd wearing antlers. This is the Little Feet poster we mentioned. It's a promo for the Little Feet compilation album called Hoy Hoy. If you look closely, you can see Hoy Hoy between the antlers and, very faintly, the words Little Feet in pink below the dog.
This is a collection released in 1981, 2 years after the band's breakup following the death of founder and lead vocalist George Lowell.
Southern California bound.
It's a double album, later released as a single CD. It contains alternate versions and live recordings of many known Feet tracks, along with previously unreleased material. It peaked at number 39 on the Billboard album chart.
This was a deep pull. On the angled wall, we get a glimpse of half a promo poster. It was enough to make an ID. The guy with the deep-set eyes and serious mustache is John Oates, one half of Hall & Oates. This poster was promoting their 1981 album, Private Eyes. Private Eyes was the 10th studio album for the American pop duo, and it was a monster. Number one singles are rare. Private Eyes would produce 2 number ones. The title track...
Private Eyes.
Was released in late August of 1981, and I Can't Go For That, No Can Do, which came out in mid-November of 1981. Have a total of 6 number one hits in their career, but these are their only back-to-back number ones.
I need to go look it up. I doubt many performers have had back-to-back number ones. I'm curious about like the Beatles and Elvis.
Those were the two that came to mind.
Yeah, I need to check and see if they've ever had back-to-backs.
I had to know. According to Joel Whitburn, both the Beatles and Elvis have only had back-to-back number ones once each in their careers. Elvis did it with Don't Be Cruel and Hound Dog in 1956. The Beatles did it in true Beatles fashion. They had four number ones in a row in 1969. Come Together, It's Flipside Something, The Long and Winding Road, and Let It Be all went to number one in succession. Both Elvis and the Beatles would have had more back-to-back number ones if they hadn't been recording in an era where flip sides could also chart.
This was a hot, hot couple of years in Hall & Oates' career, starting in January of 1981 with the single Kiss on My List, going through October of 1982 and the monster Maneater. Hall & Oates released seven singles. That's seven singles in 22 months. Six of those seven were top 10 hits, and four of them were number ones. Hall & Oates were practically the Beatles of the 80s when it came to hit production.
Frustrated, Johnny walks out of the studio and he runs into Bailey, who's walking down the hallway. She tells Johnny she was just coming to see him. Johnny asks Bailey if she's rich.
Only in the things that count, and I'm pretty PO'd about it.
Wow, that is the most zen joke imaginable, which is why it's perfect for Bailey.
Yes, Bailey has a clipboard, and she is writing on it.
Okay, John, your turn to visit Herb is pushed up to tonight.
Johnny wants to get Bailey's reaction to an amount of money. We see Les's face appear in the studio window. Johnny has his back to Les and he doesn't see him. He's trying to get Bailey's attention. Les is shaking his head no at Bailey. He shakes his finger at her as Johnny talks. Johnny tells Bailey the now familiar amount.
$562.16.
Bailey looks over at the window. Les continues with his negative hand signals.
Who do I have to kill to get it?
Love that shot setup. That's a Gunselman right there. It's got to be. We transition to the bullpen where Andy's sitting at Herb's desk. Jennifer is sitting on top of the DJ's desk, and she's talking to Andy. She's telling Andy how Art really cares about Herb. Well, Andy tells her they all do.
But sometimes you have to think of practical things like financial survival.
Johnny has entered the bullpen just as Andy says this.
Good point.
Before Johnny can go any further, Jennifer turns. She reads to Johnny from a small note.
A man named Guido Scalisi, Carl. With this message, he got frustrated when you didn't call him about the IOU, so he's sending a man to meet you at your home at noon.
Ooh, not good. Jennifer smiles at Johnny. Chuckling nervously, Johnny takes the message.
Mr. Carlson opens the door to the bullpen, and he leans in.
Are you ready to go, sales trainee?
Ready.
Without looking up from the desk, Andy gives them some advice.
This concert promoter could have a lot of business for us, you know. Don't blow it.
Don't blow it? Won't blow it. Attitude's very important, John.
I see. Andy, aren't you going to wish us luck?
Andy turns and gives them a quick look over his shoulder.
Yeah, good luck. You'll need it.
For some reason, Johnny decides now is the best time to ask Andy for a loan.
Travis, I couldn't help but overhear what you were saying about financial survival, and I was wondering if you...
Not right now, Johnny.
Johnny raises his voice a little, telling Andy, it's now or never. Johnny's getting a little desperate.
Look, Scalisi is very frustrated. I'm the only rug in sight.
Andy looks at Johnny, having no idea what he's talking about. The screen dissolves into a crossfade.
Johnny's very needy. If he's not asking for money, he needs a place to stay.
He's always on the outs. Johnny is just always at the bottom of whatever's going on.
We transition to an outside shot of the Riverfront Coliseum in Cincinnati.
And we're betting this was shot by Mr. Bob Gerding.
As we fade to an inside shot, we hear Mr. Carlson talking to Jennifer. They are walking down a dark walkway somewhere in the bowels of the Coliseum.
Now, your job is to make your client believe that he's got to have what you're selling, no matter what the price. It's kind of like...
Dating.
Yeah, that works.
Art sees a man at the end of the hall. He asks him if he knows where they can find Pat Perillo. The man seems jumpy and sweaty. He asks if they are officers of the court. This is not a good sign. Jennifer suggests they move along.
She's not feeling very comfortable.
No, we're from WKRP. I'm
KRP.
Perillo lets out a loud sigh of relief. Art asks if he's Perillo.
Look at me, I'm shaking. You know, I've been like this ever since that punk rock mix-up in Philly.
Perillo's holding out his hand so they can see how much he's shaking. Art starts to introduce Perillo to Jennifer, but he's interrupted by Perillo.
So this is your Jennifer, huh?
Pat's eyeing Jennifer up and down. Art hasn't introduced himself yet, so Perillo makes some assumptions.
Pat Perillo is being played by Dennis Lipscomb. This is early in Dennis's career. He did a couple of shorts in the late 70s, but got his first real part in the movie Union City in 1980. Dennis will notch 81 total IMDb credits with a career that spans about 22 years. He does several TV movies and a few one-episode guest roles. One of Dennis's most interesting multiple-episode characters was in the incredibly experimental, wildly horrible 1990 TV series Cop Rock. If you don't remember Cop Rock, it's hard to describe. It's like if Law and Order, SVU, was a musical. Real cops would go on real busts, then do a song and dance number in the street after the perp was put in the back of the squad car. That sounds so lovely.
It was so weird. I didn't watch it when it was on, but I have seen clips of it since.
Item last on the teletype, we still got the Franklin Avenue Flasher. Struck at 2 outdoor weddings and a school picnic so far this month. Male cock, 6'3". Look for tattoos in unusual places. Okay, that's it. And hey. Yeah. Let's be careful out there. Let's be careful out there. We had a 187 at the 7-Eleven on the corner of 4th and Main. Two Caucasians of the male persuasion poured a bullet through the cashier's brain.
Moving on, you have to audition.
Yes.
To be a cop in that district?
You must. You've
got
to
be. Bring your tap shoes.
I'm a great detective. I've got a lot of collars, and I can do tap. Yeah,
yes.
It's got to be crazy.
Well, this show was created by Stephen Butchko, so it had quality show cred. It didn't matter. It was horrible. The entire series lasted 11 episodes. Dennis was on 8 of them.
Only Stephen Butchko could have gotten away with pitching this. He was so hot at the time, they felt like he can do no wrong, so they let him go with it. Oh, man. I was at the time taking Entertainment Weekly, and I didn't watch it, but I was reading about it. And
how
just,
could you not watch it if you were reading about it?
We were young and busy at the time, and I'd never tuned it in. But, oh, man, reading about it, you just thought it was an April Fool's joke. It felt surreal.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Jennifer does not appreciate being ogled.
I beg your pardon.
Perillo says Herb told him all about her. Pat looks at Mr. Carlson.
You're a lucky man, Herb.
Carlson starts to correct Perillo, but Perillo shushes them, and he looks back behind him.
Now, it's safer if we just settle this down here.
Now, I can't take another bust.
Arrest.
Arrest?
Yep.
Now, wait a minute. What's going on here? We're talking...
Perillo keeps shushing them.
He's very paranoid, and our madcap tale of mistaken identity begins. In order to help you keep things straight from here on out, we'll refer to Art as Herb. We'll let you know when we add Les as Art. And so on.
It'll help, really. It sounds a little weird when we say it, but it does help identify these guys. Perillo moves closer to Jennifer and Carlson. He begins talking to them as he puts his arm around Jennifer. Not a good move. He rests his hand on her shoulder. His face is very close to hers, and she's cringing. Pat looks like a guy who might be wearing too much aftershave.
Yeah.
Perillo tells them the contract they sent is fine. He has the check for the whole $9,000. Jennifer is standing, so she's positioned right between Art as Herb and Pat. she becomes the translator for Art as Herb.
Problem is, you're a special fee.
Kickback.
Now, I'm worried this guy Carlson isn't as dumb as you said.
Dumb.
Do you know that he didn't even hide the gross amounts in the contract? Now, I am worried.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Perrell. I want to know exactly what.
What is it?
Relax.
And that was a neat little bit of wordplay there. That was fun to watch. Jennifer gets between Art as Herb and Perillo. She pushes Perillo's hand off her shoulder.
Jennifer tells Perillo to relax and go stand by the trash can.
And in a nice touch on the set decorator's part, it's a full trash can and with what appears to be real trash.
Yeah, between that and Perillo looking like he had a lot of aftershave, I'm glad it's not smell-o-vision.
No, it seems pretty rank down in that hallway.
Jennifer takes Mr. Carlson's arm and they take a few steps away from where they were standing.
Carlson, it is only a kickback if you pocket it. You won't.
Huh?
Mr. Carlson tells her it's wrong. Jennifer explains, not if all the money goes to the station. She reminds him they need this account.
And we want to prove Andy wrong, Herb.
Jennifer looks at Mr. Carlson, waiting for him to get on the same page.
Oh.
Okay, the light bulb is turned on. They turn to go back and talk with Perillo.
And I'm betting that check that he's delivering is padded out with money for Herb is in there, and then Herb's going to give some of it back to Pat. And there's a whole big thing going on here that's very illegal. So Art as Herb tells Perillo there's nothing to worry about. He can handle Mr. Carlson. Perillo says he hopes Art as Herb is not offended.
It's just that I got too much at stake to take your word about Carlson's incompetence.
Yeah, Jennifer tells Perillo that Art as Herb knows Carlson inside and out. Perillo tells them he appreciates that.
But for me to sign, I gotta see for myself.
Art as Herb stands looking at Perillo, not knowing what to say.
Let's go, Herb.
Three of them begin walking to the exit of the Coliseum headed for the station. We fade to black and a commercial break. And you could tell it was really tough for Art there to not respond as Art.
Yes.
It's hard for him initially here to stay in that Herb mode.
Oh.
We come back to the lobby where Bailey is at Jennifer's desk. She's getting ready to eat her lunch when Johnny comes in. He tells her if someone comes into the lobby looking for him, especially somebody big, he's not there.
Well, why don't you just go home?
Oh, sure. That's what they expect me to do. Think.
Johnny heads back to the studio. Jennifer comes running into the lobby.
Bailey, Mr. Carlson is Herb.
Huh? Art as Herb comes immediately in, followed by Mr. Perillo.
Jennifer, what did you say?
Jennifer keeps nodding at Bailey. She can't really answer her as Mr. Perillo and Art as Herb are watching. Jennifer speaks slowly, nodding at Bailey.
Herb will be waiting in Mr. Carlson's office until he comes back from lunch.
He will.
Bailey smiles at them. Perillo says he doesn't have much time.
Will he be back soon?
Who?
Carlson.
Bailey looks at Art as Herb, then at Jennifer, then back at Perillo. Then she slowly says,
I don't know.
I'm sure he will.
You are?
Mr. Perillo holds out his hand to Bailey and introduces himself.
I'm Pat Perillo.
In a hilarious move, Bailey glances at Jennifer before answering. She's not even sure she's who she should say she is.
What
Hang on
now?
A second. She's not even sure who she should say she is. Jennifer introduces her to Perillo.
Bailey Quarters.
Bailey and Perillo shake hands.
Okay, I think Bailey has it straight now,
She's
but I don't know.
Figuring it out, but it's going to be tough.
Art as Herb and Mr. Perillo go into Carlson's office. Jennifer tells Bailey she doesn't have time to explain, but for the next hour, Mr. Carlson is Herb. She asks Bailey not to tell Andy.
You know how he gets when he thinks he's right.
Bailey tells Jennifer, sure.
Now I have to find a Mr. Carlson.
Jennifer heads to the bullpen. She seems to be kind of enjoying this. Bailey's about to take a bite of her sandwich when a huge man wearing a gray suit and a turtleneck sweater walks in. He walks up to the desk. He's towering over Bailey.
Huge.
Bailey slowly turns and looks up, way up at him. She asks how she can help.
The man has a toothpick in his mouth, which seems to make things even more menacing.
Yes.
He looks incredibly intimidating.
A guy named Fever. I want him.
Bailey tells him she's sorry, but he's not here.
He ain't at home either.
The man looks at her and tells her he'll wait. He starts to walk over to sit in a chair.
The
man comes right up to Bailey and hovers over her.
Yeah?
He probably won't be back today.
So I'll wait till tomorrow.
Looking down at Bailey, the man adds,
I don't like to wait.
He starts over to sit in a chair by the door.
When he walks over to Bailey, he puts a shadow over
her. He's huge.
He takes up so much space. The big guy is being played by Mickey Morton. And we'll find out in just a few minutes that his character's name is Dave. Mickey was born in Chicago in 1927. He's had an impressive career as a big guy. He's listed in his IMDb profile at 6'7 and a quarter, but a lot of articles about him say 6'8. Mickey got his acting start in 1959 on a TV series called Yancey Derringer. Mickey appeared on two episodes as Wee Willie Benson. He would go on to rack up a total of 70 credits, working until 1990. Mickey made the rounds of some big shows in the 60s and 70s. 1967 was a big year for Mickey. He had guest shots on both Gilligan's Island and The Monkees.
Mickey, like Dennis, also has an embarrassing skeleton in his acting closet. Dennis may have done Cop Rock, but Mickey had a lead role as the Wookiee Mala in the 1978 Star Wars Holiday Special on CBS. The Star Wars Holiday Special is widely considered one of the worst TV specials of any kind ever made. It is now only available as a bootleg, which I do have a pretty clean copy. If anybody's in need, let me know.
Why doesn't that surprise?
I've got it right here on the hard drive. George Lucas claims the special is not canon, and he said if he had a sledgehammer in the time, he would track down every physical copy and destroy it. Thankfully, digital swapping on the internet means this horror show of bad jokes and awful story choices will never go away, and I'm happy to know that Mickey is Mala. That adds an extra bit of enjoyment for me. Also, gotta mention, and you Star Wars geeks know this, Mala is female. It's the shortened form of her real name. Mala is a nickname for Chewbacca's wife.
The really big guy is just inside the door as Venus enters the lobby. This sets up a hilarious visual gag. Venus comes through the door. He almost walks into Mickey, and it's like he's about to hit a wall. He gasps, and his eyes are wide as he backs up and then quickly walks over to Bailey. And this was one of the funniest moments in the whole episode for me. I laugh every time I see this.
Hi, Bailey. Is Johnny around?
No.
Where is he?
I haven't seen him.
What?
He isn't here, and I haven't seen him, and that's all I'm saying.
Bailey?
Don't push me.
And we talked about how Venus goes stiff.
Right.
His whole body tenses.
When he gasps and his arms are stiff and he just does like a little bobble when he's standing there. Venus turns to go out the main door. Seeing the mountain of a man still blocking the exit, he does a U-turn and heads through the door that leads to the bullpen. Art as Herb sticks his head out the door of his office and he hollers.
Jennifer?
No. Bailey.
Bailey seems so confused. Mr. Carlson's eyes dart around the lobby. He's looking for help. He then disappears back into his office, closing the door.
We cut to inside Art's office, where Art, as Herb, is talking to Mr. Perillo about Mr. Carlson.
Well, anyway, he's a sportsman, a fisherman, an avid reader, and this is where he likes to sit and think.
Perillo turns to Art as Herb.
Listen, Herb, I gotta ask you this. Jennifer. Whoa! I mean, isn't Mrs. Tarlick at all suspicious?
Well, I don't think so. Of course, you only see her once or twice a year.
Oops. Art as Herb realizes he may have messed up. When the door to his office opens and Jennifer enters, the interruption seems to have gotten him off the hook for the comment. Jennifer is leading Les in by the hand and Focus in, fellow babies. We got another one. From now on, Les will be referred to as Less as Art. Got it?
Here is our big guy.
Less as Art looks less than cooperative. Art as Herb hurries over to get a chair. He has a seat as Jennifer introduces Less as Art to Mr. Perillo. She, of course, introduces him as Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Carlson, this is Pat Perillo.
Well, you've got quite a reputation, Mr. Carlson. I'm pleased to meet you.
Perillo puts out his hand toward Less as Art. Less as Art looks at Art as Herb and Jennifer. He's still confused, but he decides to go along with it.
Mr. Perillo.
Less as Art shakes hands with Perillo. Perillo tells Less as Art to call him Pat. They all laugh, except for Less as Art. He's still trying to catch up.
Directing this had to be insane. Perillo looks around the office, then at Less as Art.
Well, I see you've been bitten by the fishing bug, eh?
And alarmed and forgetting who he's supposed to be, Less as Art puts his hand up on his face.
Where?
Art as Herb tells Less as Art that Pat means he likes to fish.
But I don't.
Well, Mr. Carlson, then we'll just get rid of all these stuffed fish.
Oh, get with it. Come on.
Jennifer suggests they all sit down.
Oh, yes. I fish.
Less as Art says this, it's a dazed realization as he's looking around the room. They all sit down. Less as Art is confused as to where he should sit. He then realizes which chair is his.
I'll sit here because it's my chair.
Less as Art sits in Carlson's chair. He pauses to really enjoy the sensation as he settles into Art's desk chair.
Now, Les's complete cluelessness is unintentionally and hilariously selling Perillo on Carlson's incompetence.
He seems demented. He seems lost. He has no memory of anything. It's so funny.
Art as Herb begins to explain to Less as Art why they are all there.
Listen, big guy, I wanted you to meet Pat because he's a new client of ours.
Good. Herb should be pleased.
He is.
You've seen him?
Les is having trouble remembering he's Carlson. There's no way he's going to remember Art is Herb. Perillo is looking confused.
What's he talking about?
Art as Herb looks over at Jennifer for some help.
Oh, sometimes Mr. Carlson forgets.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jennifer.
Oh, don't apologize to me. Apologize to Herb.
I would if he were here.
I am.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't mention it.
Perillo looks at Les as Art and tells him Herb said his mother takes an active interest in the station. Herb was, of course, talking about Mama Carlson. Jennifer is nodding to Les as Art, hoping he'll get it. He seems to be struggling.
So Les as Art looks at Jennifer and then at Carlson. They're both nodding their heads, encouraging him.
Go with it. Just go with it.
Of course she does.
How active.
Well, whenever it's a clear night and date and she tries to listen.
Nope. Les as Art doesn't get it, and Art as Herb is shaking his head.
Unless, of course, she's beating her rugs.
And a callback to the rugs. Les as Art leans back and puts his feet up on Carlson's desk, looking pretty satisfied with himself. Jennifer is looking at Perillo. She's got an almost manic fixed smile on her face. You can see Perillo is trying to make sense of everything, but he's not having a lot of luck.
We transition to the studio where Johnny has just told Venus how much money he owes the Scalise guy. Venus's reaction is a riot.
$562.16?
I want to hear that one more time. Johnny tells Venus he had a little run of bad luck with this guy, Scalise, and now he can't go home.
If I don't pay up, there's a guy waiting in my house going to turn me into a doorstop.
Venus apologizes to Johnny. He says his cash flow is at bottom line.
This is me, man.
My leverage has been diluted to a 1.25.
Okay, I'll just go to Mexico. I'll become a DJ in Mexico. Adios.
Johnny heads out the door to the studio hallway. And there are no vibin' threads this time for Venus, but we did want to mention the very cool ceramic Rolling Stones pin he's wearing on his collar.
Venus is sitting on the DJ desk shaking his head. He's feeling bad for Johnny when the door opens and Johnny comes back in.
My passport has expired. Do they have illegal aliens in Mexico?
I've never thought of that.
Yeah. So Johnny turns and leaves the room again, and Venus yells after him.
John, you can hide out at my house.
Thank you. I knew you'd come through for me, brother.
Just for a couple of days.
Okay, and then you'll loan me the money.
No.
Should Johnny really be going to Mexico? Doesn't he have trouble with the federales in Mexico?
I think he's always in trouble with the federales.
167 Mexican cops or whatever it was?
It was nothing. It was a minor misunderstanding one night with 145 Mexican cops.
He's just kidding.
Yeah.
Come on, let's go eat.
I thought there were soldiers.
Yeah. I'll catch up with
sure.
you.
He said, show me some badges. And the guy said, badges? We don't need no stinking badges.
And in answer to Johnny's question, yes, there are illegal immigrants in Mexico. The Mexican government documented more than 200,000 illegal border crossings each year for both 2004 and 2005. Many of the illegal crossings come from impoverished South American countries like Guatemala, Haiti, Honduras, and El Salvador.
Johnny would be among friends. The biggest single group of illegal immigrants in Mexico are Americans. Last estimate puts the number of American illegals in Mexico at about 1.5 million.
Wow.
Most Americans don't cross the border illegally. Instead, they've probably entered the country at some point legally, then overstayed their visa.
And back in the lobby, poor Bailey, we see her still at Jennifer's desk. The mountain of a man looking for Johnny is also still there. Andy comes in and he walks straight to the desk. He doesn't see the big guy who stands up when Andy enters.
Hi, Bailey. How's it going?
He gathers up the messages on his desk and turns to head to his office, running right into Man Mountain. It's as if he ran into a wall. Andy is face to Adam's apple with the guy. Andy, his body stiff with his arms down to his side, slowly looks up at the man's face.
Are you Fever?
No. You're Mr.
Dave. They said he was a little thin, blonde-headed guy. It's close. Very close.
Andy gets off the hook by having brown hair. Phew, that was a little too close.
I love how we have these insane storylines now all coming together in the lobby. Dave moves to the side and he lets Andy pass. Andy walks backwards to the other side of Bailey. Holding the papers he just scooped up from the desk up to shield his mouth, he bends down to Bailey.
Something's happening here.
Yeah, something definitely is happening. Bailey looks at Andy.
Plenty.
Is Jennifer and Mr. Carlson back?
Sort of.
Andy starts backing towards Art's office while giving a friendly smile to Giant Dave. Suddenly, Johnny and Venus come into the lobby. Oh, the party is kicking into gear now. They stop short at the sight of Dave.
Dave easily blocks their path.
Fever!
Where? I've been looking for that deadbeat all over myself.
Johnny looks at Venus.
Have you seen him around?
Oh, no, I haven't seen anyone for years.
Johnny hooks his arm in Venus's.
Maybe we should just go look for him somewhere else.
Yes, yeah.
They begin walking quickly to the main entrance. Dave puts his arm out and catches Johnny under his neck. Dave is looking down at Johnny.
You're closer than the beefcake over there.
Dave nods his head toward Andy. Curious about the term beefcake? Check our Filthy Pictures episode. We cover it.
Johnny and Venus hooked arms like they were heading down the yellow brick road.
Yes. They're so scared.
Andy walks toward Johnny and Dave.
Just a minute. I hate to interrupt here.
Then don't.
Okay.
I like that.
That's a good line. Andy turns and walks back over by the filing cabinets. Johnny nervously begins jabbering.
Did I introduce myself? I'm Andy Travis. I'm a program director here at WKRP.
And we've got another one. Johnny is now Johnny as Andy. So Johnny as Andy shakes Dave's hand. Then he points at the real Andy.
And this is my brother, Randy. And this is old Venus, of course.
Of course. That's right, Bailey.
And we'll just call the real Andy, Randy. Bailey drops her head, looking exhausted.
I think I'm just going to lie down for a while.
Bailey leaves the lobby, headed to the bullpen.
And if I were Bailey, I would have stuck around. I'd want to see,
see what
how this is going to end. The door opens to Mr. Carlson's office, and Mr. Perillo, Les as Art, Jennifer, and Art as Herb, come walking out.
Well, Mr. Carlson, I see that everything I heard about you was true.
Les as Art puts his hand on Perillo's shoulder.
Well, not everything.
Les as Art is really getting into the role-playing now. This probably isn't a good thing.
He's freelancing.
Oh, Mr. Perillo, would you like to meet some of my staff? Yeah.
Les as Art walks over toward Johnny as Andy. Johnny as Andy is looking at Les as Art with wide eyes. He's shaking his head no in short little movements. Jennifer and Art as Herb are also shaking their heads no.
Oh, don't do that.
I don't think we have time for that, big guy. We'll make the time, Herb. Mr. Perillo, this is my program director.
Johnny, as Andy, quickly cuts in, sticking his hand out for Mr. Perillo to shake.
Andy Travis, real pleased to meet you. This is my brother Randy, and this here's old Venus, of course.
Of course.
Venus is just smiling widely at the whole room, but he looks terrified.
We don't know who the Mountainoid is.
Mountainoid. The perfect description, Mountainoid.
Randy, remember him, tells everyone the big guy's name is Dave, and he's looking for Johnny.
Wherever he is.
We'll let you get back to your office, Mr. Carlson. Oh, but I was doing so much better.
Mr. Carlson, you're busy, busy, busy.
Okay, I do have a big pile of stuff on my desk.
What a mess.
Les as Art turns, and he starts to go to the bullpen when Jennifer says his name.
Mr. Carlson.
And points to Carlson's office.
Oh, yes. That is my office, so that is where I work.
Les as Art goes on into Carlson's office.
Now, we see Randy Andy. Back by the filing cabinet, scratching his head, not knowing what is happening, but he's keeping quiet. Mr. Perillo looks at Art as Herb.
I'm sorry I doubted you. Carlson's a real Looney Tune.
Jennifer tells Perillo they all love the big guy. Perillo looks at his watch and then looks at Art as Herb.
Listen, Herb, I think we can sign this contract on the way to the airport, huh?
Art as Herb tells Perillo that's fine. He'll be out in a minute. Perillo heads toward the door. Johnny, as Andy, runs up to Perillo and begins walking next to him. Venus falls into step with them.
Maybe I could get a ride with you. You can ride with me.
Yeah.
Nice meeting you, Dave.
They both wave at Dave as they walk out the main door. They escaped!
Mr. Carlson, who's not completely back to being Mr. Carlson just yet, turns to Jennifer.
In a little while, when I'm happy again because we've made a sale, remind me what's been said about me and by whom. A certain little salesman I know is going to suffer.
Jennifer turns to go into Carlson's office saying she's going to babysit the big guy. We are left with Dave, Andy, and Art as Herb still standing in the lobby. Now, before Art as Herb can get out of the lobby, Andy walks towards him. In a dumb move, Andy decides this is the perfect moment to give Carlson a hard time.
Yeah, it's nice to see that the sales department is running like a well-oiled machine. Good work, Herb.
I'm just doing my job, Johnny.
And one last bit of mistaken identity. Art gives a little smile to Andy, then looks up at Dave before leaving the lobby. Woo, Dave glares at Andy and begins walking towards him. The screen goes to black, along with Andy's eyes, I'm afraid.
A guy named Fever. I want him.
And we're back in Herb's hospital room for the capper scene. Everyone is back to their true identities. Herb is lying in his bed as Johnny is eating Herb's hospital dinner.
And Johnny scarfing down Herb's dinner is really funny. Howard Hessman definitely commits to this bit.
And he must be very hungry to eat hospital food.
Well, there's no telling how long it's been since he's gone home.
Herb asks Johnny if he's been replaced at the station.
Sort of.
Herb sits up, alarmed. He starts asking if he's out of a job. Lifting the lid on another plate, Johnny begins eating the food from it.
Well, no, you got Les's job. It's kind of confusing.
Carlson gave me his word.
Which one?
Which word?
Which Carlson?
Herb points at the door.
Carlson and Jennifer are walking through the hospital room door. Jennifer is carrying a large gift wrapped in gold paper. Looking closely, we see in place of a ribbon, there is a white belt around the center of the box. This is a hilarious detail.
The only way it could have been better is if the wrapping paper had been plaid.
We know it's for Herb. Johnny looks up agitated. He tells them it's his turn to visit. Check the list. Carlson tells Johnny it's okay.
Well, I just want to get credit for this.
We decided to stop by since we were down in emergency with Andy. Huh?
And a call back to Randy's run-in with Dave. Jennifer says Andy's going to be fine.
Yeah, no bones were broken. He'd like to see you, John.
Me?
He is your brother, isn't he?
Yeah, I guess he is.
Johnny looks at the green Jell-O jiggling on a little plate. Johnny picks up the plate and dumps the Jell-O into his hand. It's a travel snack. He tells Herb to take care and walks out of the room.
And did you notice that Mr. Carlson answered Johnny as Herb?
Yeah.
When Johnny said, take care, Mr. Carlson said, I will. Herb sits up and looks at Jennifer. He's confused.
Jennifer.
Oh, don't excite yourself. You have a few surprises coming.
Jennifer, guard the door.
Carlson begins unbuttoning his suit vest as he talks with Herb.
Herb, today's heart test didn't show any problems.
None.
Good.
Mr. Carlson is smiling as he says he's glad Herb's old ticker is purring right along. Carlson seems to be preparing for something.
Oh, shoot. I should be out of here no later than tomorrow afternoon.
Mr. Carlson loosens his tie.
Don't count on it, Herb.
Art's going to get some payback right there in the hospital.
Herb's smile slowly disappears as the screen fades to black.
And we leave Gunselman World with a smile on our face. That was a fun episode.
That was a really
just
fun episode.
Madcap.
But I can't picture Mr. Carlson hitting anybody. It's hard for me to picture that.
No,
yeah.
Probably not. I don't think he actually hit it. Before we talk about next week's show, I got a quick mention about our upcoming episode order. I posted a note to the Facebook page last week mentioning how the final episodes of the series are not listed in the correct order on IMDb, Wikipedia, or TVGuide.com. We have some great research supporting these inaccurate dates. We're only talking about a couple of things. Changes is listed as the wrong date. Then the third to last and second to last titles get drastically moved. We'll keep you updated as to which episode we're doing next. We will also be talking about what was going on with the show at the time and why the actual air dates of the final episodes don't match the story that we've been told for the last 40 years. That's down the road, but for now, Donna, what is our next episode?
Our next episode is 3 days of the condo. When Johnny comes into a large amount of money, everyone at the station is curious to see what he will do with it. After regretting a condo purchase, he has to figure a way out of the deal.
That's going to do it for this episode of the WKRP Cast. If you'd like to watch along with us, make sure to check our show notes. Also, find us on social media. Follow our Facebook page at WKRP Cast. For more WKRP fun, become a patron. Go to patreon.com/WKRPcast for behind-the-scenes fun, full interviews, and more.
Got a question, comment, or correction? Let us know about it. Write us WKRPcast@gmail.com.
And remember to please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Bye now.
May the good news be yours.
We'll be right back.
WKRP cast is not endorsed by MTM Enterprises, Shout Factory, or CBS. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. WKRP in Cincinnati, the WKRP logo, and all names, pictures, and audio of WKRP in Cincinnati characters are registered trademarks of MTM, CBS, Shout Factory, or their respective copyright holders.
Almost forgot, fellow babies. Booger!